How is ministering going in your ward? Has the excitement worn off? Do you find that you still can't motivate those you lead to reach out and minister to those who need it most? Don't worry, Leading LDS is here to help. Go to leadinglds.org/ministering book and you can get a free copy of my book called A Culture of Ministering, Leading the Relief Society and Elders Quorum to Minister Unto His People. This book isn't just about ministering, it's about how to lead the ministering effort in your Relief Society or Elders Quorum. Again, visit leadinglds.org/ministering book to get a free copy for you or your favorite leader. Leading LDS is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enhancing leadership ability and capacity of lay leaders in order to accelerate the mission of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Leading LDS is not owned nor operated by the LDS Church, and any opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of any specific organization. All donations given to Leading LDS are tax deductible and go towards the support of Leading LDS. For more information, visit leadinglds.org.
My name is Mike Ramsey from Burley, Idaho, and I can't even count all the ways that the Leading LDS podcast has had an effect on me and my leadership style. From really thinking about how to help millennial Mormons to gaining empathy and appreciation for those who battle addiction, Leading LDS continues to bring transparency to stories and subjects that truly matter today and help me be a leader, not a colleague.
Welcome back to another episode of the Leading LDS podcast. I am recording this introduction on Labor Day, and my whole family's here. My wife's actually in the same room with me, folding our laundry. How are you, Alana? She's hating I'm doing this, but anyways, she doesn't have a mic in front of her. But someday, this is interesting. We've come full circle because not only do you listen to my podcast while you fold laundry sometimes, and don't get me wrong, folks, I take my turn folding laundry. But now you are hearing the podcast getting made while you fold laundry. Full circle. Give us a shout out. Let them know you're here. You can just yell from the other across the room. Oh, here she comes. All right.
Hello, Leading LDS community.
All right. There she is, folks. I digress. In this episode, it's a fantastic one with Mark Matheson, who is a professor at Southern Virginia University, which we talk about. If you're not familiar with Southern Virginia University, it is often known as the BYU of the East Coast. Though it's not a church-sanctioned, you know, university, they definitely mimic and use some of the same values and honor code. And Mark has the opportunity to teach there. He is a visiting professor of business at Southern Virginia University. He's received a doctorate in organizational leadership from the University of Phoenix, a master's degree in business administration from Harvard University, and a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering from the University of Utah. And in 2010, Matheson was an entrepreneur in residence at the Willis Center for International Entrepreneurship at BYU, Hawaii. So nonetheless, he's a great guy. I had a great time interviewing him while he was visiting Utah. And this is one you'll want to take some notes, maybe listen to again. He gives a lot of zingers in there that you'll want to note and turn into vinyl lettering for your office and put it on the wall. It's fantastic. Oh, and before I start the interview, I should also mention that Mark has a fantastic new Instagram account called Scripture Analyst, where he takes various scriptures and gospel topics and creates Instagram posts. And it really helps you think about the scriptures in a new way or step back and ponder over what you're experiencing on social media, specifically Instagram, and have a more of an experience, a learning experience with the content there. So go to instagram.com/scriptureanalyst to find it and follow, and I think it'll be worth a follow. And now here is my interview with Mark Matheson. Today I'm sitting down with Mark Matheson. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing great, Kurt. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, well, I'm glad we could connect. You live in Virginia, but you're here in Utah, and so we set up a time to quickly get together and make a recording, and I think we'll be glad, along with the audience, that we did this. So give us a little background. What does the audience need to know about Mark Matheson?
I grew up in Utah, lived in 7 different states, and Switzerland and France on a mission.
French-speaking?
French-speaking.
Yeah, okay.
So I have come back, got a degree in chemical engineering from the University of Utah, MBA from Harvard, a doctorate in organizational leadership from the University of Phoenix. So I've gone from hard science to soft, touchy-feely science.
Wow.
In my career. Spent 25 years as a stock market analyst, retired, and now I've spent the last 8 years as a volunteer professor a year at BYU Hawaii, and now I'm starting my 8th year at Southern Virginia University.
Wow. Was it tough to leave Hawaii?
No, about 9 months was about right to enjoy Hawaii and then just go back for 2 weeks every so often.
Nice. That's great. So, and Southern Virginia University, that, I mean, that's known as the BYU of the East Coast, right? Though it's, the church doesn't own it. It's an independent university.
Independent, started by a Virginia businessman who's heavily supported it. And now we have 1,000 students, liberal arts college, LDS honor code. So about 95% of the students are LDS, over 50% of them are student athletes. So it's a great place for someone that wants to keep playing college sports after high school to do it in an LDS environment because you know, the other BYUs besides Provo have dropped their intercollegiate athletics.
Yeah. But there's no like required religion classes or anything like that? Or
actually, this fall, we're going to start requiring institute. It's been optional and now this fall, it's going to be, I think, mandatory.
Nice. And so, and those credits would transfer to BYU pretty easily? Okay.
Yeah, we're fully accredited.
Yeah. And so there, but there's not necessarily a church overtone, is it?
It's a normal university, but just a great LDS environment. We have two stakes in a town of 6,700 people.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, I compared a little Jackson County in the East, and we have people all the time that, from all over the East that come there and say, I feel like the Lord wants me to live here. And they just come and buy a house and say, can I work at your university? And it's just a haven for the East Coast saints. I think in a few years, it might be one of the biggest LDS populations east of Utah.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. And with my involvement with Leading LDS, I'm connecting more and more with individuals there. I definitely need to pay a visit and check out this this campus that's back east. But so what is it that you teach there and your involvement there?
I teach the required leadership course in the business program. Also teach investments. I was a stock market analyst for 25 years, so I have financial background. And I teach the entrepreneurship class in the past and whatever else I need. Introduction to business. You know, I do this for fun. I do this as a volunteer. So I just do it because these kids are at a crossroads in their life and they keep me young to be around them.
Yeah, fulfilling, I bet.
Oh, we'll go out and play pickleball or, you know, I go to their games and I just feel like I'm there at the crossroads when they need some guidance in their career and their marriages and personal life. And it just was really valuable. We call it our designer mission. Uh-huh. My wife and I, we've been doing this now for 8 years and, we're having probably more impact on people than we would doing a normal mission.
Yeah. So you just keep doing it and enjoying it.
Doing it. Love it. Love
it. That's great. Well, I always love when I get emails from those in the academic fields and the collegiate level that have, that are teaching leadership courses, because there's some fantastic content research that's discussed in some of these classes that everyday bishop or Relief Society president may never come in contact with some of this research or information. So I always try and bridge that gap. And so as we talk here, I'd love to just touch on a few principles that we discussed before we hit record. But let's talk about, you mentioned the mission statement or the vision statement of Southern Virginia University, and it's very leadership focused.
Yes. Their mission is to create leader servants. And so one thing I do in my classes, I say, all right, is that the best focus? Is the noun properly servants, and then leader is the adjective. So should it be a servant leader that we're trying to build, or should it be a leader servant? I actually like the gerund form, the ing form, where we're trying to create serving leaders. And the other one to think about is, are we creating leading servants? So it just gets the students thinking about, all right, what's my role in the future as a leader? Am I going to be a servant or am I going to be a leader? Am I going to be a follower? It gets their thinking caps going.
Yeah. And what's the typical, is there a typical discussion that comes from that? That because sometimes a servant leader, I think there's this feeling that, everybody in the church feels they want to be the servant leader. They don't want to be the authoritative leader. At least most people, I think we've all had that one bishop in our life who was more authoritative, but what can we learn from that as far as mixing those two titles, servant and leader?
I think it comes down to the paradigm about the organization as a pyramid. And so you think of the pyramid with the little peak at the top and the leaders at the top, and all the big parts of the pyramid are supporting that leader at the top.
Yeah.
And then the paradigm where you flip that and you have the inverted pyramid, where it's the leader pinnacle at the bottom carrying the organization on their shoulders, and they're serving the whole organization, and their purpose is to see the organization thrive and develop. And not everyone is just, you know, bowing down to the Pharaoh or the president and paying obeisance to that.
Yeah.
So I think those are two different models. And I think in the church, we have the model as the leader is the sacrificing one. The leader is the one that comes in last and, you know, gives up their life for the good of the flock.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to a bishop out in California. I was there last week, and I asked him, what's the biggest thing that surprised you about being a bishop? He's been a bishop about 2-3 years now. And he said, you know, surprised me how reactive I have to be as opposed to proactive. What I want to be. And so what concerns me when someone hears something like being a servant leader, they think, oh, that means I serve everybody. Every problem that comes to my office, I have to focus on that. Where they get caught up in that a bishop can be, you know, just using a bishop example, but really any leader, at least society president, can be so reactive. People saying, well, I need this and that. And then you're only serving the squeaky wheels of the ward and not those that maybe are less eager to bring it forward and those things. So how can we take that concept and not misunderstand it, that we're just supposed to be running around serving everybody with every little problem?
One thing that strikes me is I try to get my students to have a leadership toolkit where they're developing all these skills. They will have a repertoire of skills one day, and when they have a certain problem or issue come up, they'll be ready to handle that because of that skill is already sitting in their toolbox,
yeah,
waiting to be used in the proper situation. So it's sort of like a playlist of songs that you have loved, and you have them ready to go when you need them. So it's not a checklist where you're checking things off negatively. It's a playlist where you're proactively putting these things into play.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've tried so hard in my lifetime. I've seen the church has tried to shift the burden from the bishops so much, and we really haven't done it very well yet. Mm-hmm. The bishop is still that bottleneck in the ward. Everything has to go through the bishop, and everyone expects the bishop to be at every function and doing everything.
He's the decision maker. He's the revelatory recipient, right?
Yes. I mean, I think, why have we had the tradition that all the good ideas have to come from the bishop? We're not a suggestion box church where we let ideas percolate up from the ranks. Mm-hmm. And I think we miss out on a lot of great ideas and a lot of buy-in. If people felt that their ideas were going to be implemented in the ward, we're not talking doctrinally, we're talking about procedures, yeah, and operations.
Yeah. I want to do the activity this way. I think this is a good idea. All right, let me run with it.
Let them do it.
Yeah.
I like to hear the bishops when they say they turn over the meetings to their counselors and they just focus on the people. I think that would be a pretty good model. And that way they could deflect a lot of the requests. And, you know, you hear about the old ladies in the ward that, you know, only will take a blessing from the bishop.
Yeah.
And we got to train our people better to say, no, your home teacher is the first one to do that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, maybe the elders quorum presidency to come by, and or just your neighbor. I mean, wouldn't it be great if we didn't have to have any assignments, no ministering assignments at all? We just ministered to everyone we could see out through our window.
Yeah, yeah.
And they come to me for a blessing instead of calling anyone up in the hierarchy.
Right, right. And so going back to that statement with servant leader, what I'm hearing you say is that it really starts with, one, delegation, and then two, autonomy after you delegate those things and creating that culture.
You know, we have a phrase in the church that we've heard many times, return and report.
Yeah.
We do a very poor job of that. I've said many times, if we could just get people to return and report and be accountable, it would change the world. Mm-hmm. It would have such an impact on the church, and it would flow all the way around the world, because the church would be so much more effective and efficient.
Yeah,
if we just could be accountable and follow up. But we're a little bit afraid in the church to put any pressure on people to do their assignments because we're afraid we'll push them out of the church. Well, they'll go inactive if I hold them accountable for not seeing Sister So-and-so in the last couple months.
Yeah.
So we put on our kid gloves and play nice and don't want to put any pressure on people, where in the real world, people like to have responsibility. That, mm-hmm. That's one of the biggest things that people leave jobs for, is because they don't get responsibility and autonomy. It's not to do with pay. Pay is usually about number 5 or 6 on the list of why people leave jobs. Usually near the top is they don't feel like their ideas are heard. They don't feel like they have any responsibility. They don't feel they can have any impact. And if we could have that happen in our wards, it would be an amazing improvement in service and impact in the world around us.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ryan Gottfredson's done a lot of writing and research for Leading LDS around this concept of engagement, and having an engaged people is linked to some of these things you mentioned of feeling like I have purpose here, that I'm counted on and I'm given a chance to, you know, move the ball down the field. And this takes my mind, you know, let me go down that route in a minute here, but I want to go back to just to make sure we cover this vision statement effectively. Of Relief Society, President wakes up Sunday morning and says, today I'm going to be a servant leader. What does that look like, or what traits or principles can she think about as she's going through her Sunday to be an effective servant leader?
One of the things I try to get my students to just embed in their memory banks is a good leader removes obstacles and provides resources for their followers. Mm. So that Relief Society president could be thinking, all right, is Sister So-and-so ready for the lesson? Is our music person that, you know, was sick last week, are they there? They could be thinking of all the things that could go wrong, all the possible obstacles, and they could get on their phones and text and call these people Friday and Saturday before and say, you know, anything I do to help you for this Sunday, any obstacles that you're feeling, any way I can give you more resources, do you feel you have enough help in your calling? And so it reminds me of a version of the old management idea, managed by walking around.
Yeah, love that.
You know, just always interfacing with your people and seeing if they have what we call the 3 T's, time, tools, and training. So do all your primary workers, all your Relief Study teachers, do they have the training for their calling? Have I given them enough time to prepare? And do they have the tools? Do they have the manuals? Do they know how to download a church video so we don't spend 5 minutes during the lesson trying to figure out how to work the TV and it's all ready to roll? So just, I think if we just put ourselves in the shoes of our followers and said, what can I do to make their job easier, and let the Spirit prompt us, and then get on the phone and call them and get feedback. Just talking to people and letting them know we care. Probably the number one thing I say in my class is probably, my students probably hear it 25 times during the semester, is the phrase, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So our leaders need to get out and know their teachers intimately, know all these people. But like when the semester starts in a couple weeks back at Southern Virginia University, one of the first things I do is I get the names of the students and I get their pictures, and I try to memorize their picture and their name before we even get to class. Mm-hmm. So the first day I can come in and say, oh, Susie, how was your summer in California? And she'll look at me and say, well, how do you know I was in California? Well, I've done my homework on her. I already can ask her something. And I'll look at her shirt and say, oh, you're a lacrosse player. And I'll get her talking about lacrosse. So they know I care about them. I have them sign up for an interview. So I interview all my students the first week of school. So I have a sheet of bio information on all of them. I know when they graduated from high school, what they've been doing since high school, what are their career plans, where did they go on their mission, are they married, all those things. And so then the rest of the semester, I can use that in the classroom to better relate the material to their individual lives. So I can see that being very applicable in a ward setting. I am so frustrated that we don't absolutely have everybody's picture on LDS tools, right, and the information often on there is inaccurate.
Yeah.
If I were an elders quorum president today, I would say our next Sunday,
everybody line up. We're taking selfies.
and we're checking our information, and then I'm assigning all of you to go talk to these two people that weren't here today and take their picture and get their information on the church website.
Love it.
And I also have suggested this summer to my Elishkorn president to let's have a bio, some like a Google page or a Google Doc where we can find out what everyone does. You know, I live in a ward where we have a world-class expert on the Aurora Borealis and a world-class expert on cyanide. I mean, two really...
Get them together, see what we can learn. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, they're fascinating topics. And so, you know, it would be so much better if we knew more about everyone else in the quorum.
Yeah. Yeah, so true. I want to rewind to, man, you've gone through a lot there that I think we'll dig into, but going back to, you use the principle of leadership by walking around. And I think this ties in perfectly of learning what a true servant leader is, because that relief side present waking up on Sunday morning, it's easy to think, okay, I'm a servant leader, so I'm going to show up and put out every fire that I see.
It's too late.
It's too late.
On Sunday morning, it's too late. She should have been waking up Monday morning and had those thoughts.
And that's great, right? And waking up every day, not just saying, okay, it's Sunday, this is when I'm in leadership mode, church, but really thing on a Tuesday morning, you know, what obstacles can I anticipate and remove so that others around me can serve and lead?
One of the books I use in my class, they give the technique that the leader makes up two different to-do lists. They do one for themselves, and their second to-do list is, what can I do to bring life to my followers? That's a theme of one of the books. There's a book we read called The Life of Manny. And the whole issue is, the leader brings life and brings energy and excitement and caring to their followers. And so you have a to-do list every week saying, what do I need to do to bring life to my crew or my team this week? Mm. So it's just a great idea.
And by being a leader, you know, leadership by walking around, it's, you know, again, it's a day-to-day activity and you're anticipating obstacles. And then you're enabling others around you, right? You're not saying you call everybody and say, oh, you're not ready for the lesson. Well, I'll do it myself then. But you're anticipating making sure that they're all there so that they can succeed in their calling. And if they succeed in their calling, they'll be more engaged and they'll enjoy their calling. And if they enjoy their calling, your life is much more enjoyable as the leader.
Yes. If they don't feel engaged and they fail at their calling, then they'll pull back and it's just a downward spiral from there.
Yeah.
They'll be embarrassed that they didn't show up last week. And it just starts a bad trend. So I like how you said it initially, being proactive. We need to spend more time being proactive and less time being reactive.
Right.
So that's where I think the Spirit can be so powerful. The Spirit can anticipate the future. And if we can call down the Spirit into our leadership to see things and anticipate problems before our mortal brains even start to understand what's going on, that's so crucial. We have access to the smartest person in the universe to be on our team. Can you imagine?
So true.
We have a member of the Godhead 24/7 in our lives if we want, and we don't take advantage of that. You know, we should be calling on the Holy Ghost for guidance in our personal life, our family life, our work life, our church life. You know, it should be the best team in the world, he and I.
Yeah, and that's a great place to start to being proactive is getting on your knees and saying, how should I be proactive, right? Lead me, guide me, you know, fantastic.
Well, remember, I like though that President Nelson, I think in his April conference talked about having good information is a good first step to getting good revelation.
Yeah.
So we need to do better than just asking Heavenly Father, what should I do in my calling this week? It's you think about it as much as you can. You make some notes. And then you go in prayer and have your notes in front of you. Have your eyes open. I think more people should have their eyes open during their prayers with pencil and paper. Mm. And, you know, Heavenly Father's never going to be upset that you stop your prayer and write a piece of inspiration down.
Yeah.
Never, you know, so we should
How
have...
How dare you walk away?
We should have good interactive prayers where we've done our homework first and take some ideas to the Lord and say, hey, should we do this in our ward? And then he can give us some guidance rather than just put the burden on the Lord and say, Lord, what should we do in our ward? Mm-hmm. You know,
go try some things and see what works, right? Yeah. The sort of a buzzword in leadership is developing culture, this idea of culture. And I think out of all my time with leading LDS, I feel like I keep coming back to this concept of culture, of being, of building culture, because culture leads to high engagement. And you talk about this book. What's the book about? It's Your Ship.
It's Your Ship, written by a Navy commander who took his Navy ship from the worst ship in the Pacific Fleet to the best.
Wow.
And he has 60 stories in the book. I counted them once, of ways he did that. It made me want to quit and go be a Navy commander. I thought, what a great opportunity to see if you could do something similar and take a, you know, and I compare it to the church, you know, take it from the worst ward in the state to the best.
Yeah.
You know, have that vision where you can change the culture of your ward and have people be excited to be part of your ward. Wouldn't that be cool that it's sort of like, you know, hey, I work for Apple Computer, you know, hey, great coming. Well, I'm in the Garden Park 6th Ward. That's, everyone wants to be in my ward because it's the great ward out there that has just such a wonderful culture that people don't want to leave that.
Yeah. And this commander, you said, uses the phrase that that it's going to be the best darn ship in the fleet, or maybe doesn't use those words, but...
Yeah, he uses the word we don't like to use.
Okay. And you use it that our goal and focus should be the best darn warden in the stake, or the best darn warden in the church, right? And it's not about being the best so that you're above others, right? But let me tell you a story, an experience I had just last week at I did a fireside workshop in Southern California, and I was helping the group work through creating a vision statement and the power of the vision statement could be. And one of the exercises I do is I have the group ask themselves and ponder over the question is, what do you want individuals to say about your CORM in 10 years? And, you know, interesting question, gets the brain cooking, you know, and you start thinking of ideas. And one individual raised their hand and he said, well, what if I don't care what they think about my organization? And he said it in a way that he wasn't being flippant, or he was being very sincere. And I thought, I think there's this issue that crops up in our culture sometimes, that if we try and be the best, or if we try and over excel in our leadership, there's not much humility in that. And so we have to counteract that with humility and, gee, you know, I'm just a person and been asked to do this. And we get so bogged down with these statements of these humility statements that we leave confidence completely out of the equation. When in reality, confidence is not the opposite of humility, right? And so how would you answer that question? Is why would I want somebody to remember my ward or my CORM 10 years? I don't, you know, it's not about me.
I think the natural, you know, disciple of Jesus Christ cares deeply about their brethren and their sisters. Mm-hmm. And so we are our brother's keeper. That's the essence of life. I'm retired now. There's nothing that motivates me anymore in my life. I don't need to be having my name quoted in the papers anymore. I don't need to make any more money. All I care about is, am I doing some good for somebody else today?
Yeah.
That's what motivates me every day. And when I can come home and say, wow, I have made an impact on some people. Mm-hmm. So,
and I guess, you know, I just worry there's some leaders out there just saying, you know, I'm asked to fulfill this calling. I'll turn the lights on Sunday, unlock the doors, but let's not get too puffed up here. I guess it goes back to, what is it? You know, in Alma 26, I believe, where one of the sons of Mosiah are sort of puffing themselves up, like, glory to God that we have done this, right? And pardon my lack of scriptural knowledge here, but, you know, his brother just says, whoa, 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 like, let's not get too caught up in this. But in reality, there's this level of when a leadership presidency gets together and says, you know, we're going to make this special for individuals that participate in this group. And it's not about us. It's not about puffing us up so that we can move to the next rung on the ladder of leadership, but it's about creating something that people will be able to engage with and move forward, right?
Let me tell you one that happened to me this week. I live in an older community. I was at the community pool, and four ladies came in about 9 o'clock at night to the pool, and they were laughing and joking. And I recognized one of them as the Relief Society president in the neighboring ward. And I joked to him and said, hey, are you holding a Relief Society presidency meeting in the pool tonight? And they said, no, we just came from that. And now we're having fun together. And they laughed and talked for another hour in the pool together. And I thought, wow, isn't that cool that they had that camaraderie and sisterhood? They didn't want to go home after their presidency meeting. They wanted to keep having, associating and friendshipping with each other beyond the requirements of the job. So I just think, wow, if we could have those things happen in our wards. Another incident that I remember from my youth that really helped me see how this leader serves is I had a Sunday school teacher right before my mission that was great. He gave us great lessons. That's when I really first learned to distinguish the Holy Ghost. And then the state came out with a mission preparation class, and it was the same time as our ward Sunday school class. And so we were all bummed that we were not going to get to go to our favorite Sunday school class. This teacher said, well, let's meet at 7:30. I will teach you at 7:30 all the people that are in the missionary preparation class, and I'll teach the Sunday school class twice for those who can't make it the first time. And that's always been such a great example in my life of the sacrifice that a leader makes.
Yeah.
It's not about them. They and I actually mentioned that to that teacher 30 years later. He did not remember that at all. Totally blank on that incident, but it had such a powerful impact on me.
Yeah.
So I wish, here's something I've always thought personally, you know, while we still had home teaching, you know, back in the olden days.
Right, right.
My goal personally was that I wanted my families to think I was the best home teacher that ever had. And so that motivated me to be above and beyond the once a month lesson kind of guy. And so that goes back to your story is, how do you want to be remembered? I want people to think I was the best, you know, nursery leader they've ever had, that their kids loved to come to my nursery class. And I hope that they remember that I'm the best activities chairman they've ever had in the stake. And we had the best activities in that stake when they were growing up. And why can't we have the culture of being the best? We believe we are. We have so much of those roots about being the best, but it really doesn't translate into our actions very well in our ward operations.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, another way, that's just another way of saying I'm trying to be like Jesus Christ, because he was the best that lived. And when we serve in that way, that we're striving to be and serve like him, not so that they'll remember our name, but so that they'll remember his name and his gospel. I mean, we shoot for excellence that way. And sometimes I feel like we put this idea of humility that limits us from reaching excellence because, oh, we have to be humble and we can't, let's not get carried away here.
Right? Elder Bednar's talk in April 2018 General Conference on being meek and lowly is a great one to review on this topic.
Right.
That'll have some really, because he talks about that balance between humble and meek. He actually draws a distinction between humility and meekness.
Right. And I think, and as I've pondered over that, meekness has a lot to do with confidence and humility. Like the combination of confidence and humility usually ends up in meekness. And we see that from, you know, the examples he shares from the Book of Mormon. And awesome. Anything else as far as that conversation goes, as far as it feels like we've covered it. Anything you'd want to include there about being, about aiming for excellence and being the best that you can be?
You know, leadership has often deals a lot with vision, and having the vision really matter and not just be a mission statement on a wall that no one really cares about. And, you know, it doesn't change anyone's life. If we could get being the best in our leadership positions as one of our real goals in life, that would change the church.
Yeah.
I just wish we could catch the vision that I love. That's why I love leading LDS, your subtitle. It's not a calling.
Yeah.
It's much deeper than that. It changes us. It shapes us into becoming like Jesus Christ.
You mentioned early on about accountability and holding people accountable. And this dynamic we have in the church that sometimes we think, okay, this is a volunteer organization. Nobody has to be here. And okay, Brother Jones, yeah, he really dropped the ball there. But let's just not talk about it, and I'll just do it next time. And let's not ruffle his feathers, because we'd hate for him to be offended. And maybe if he was offended, maybe he wouldn't show up on church, right? So how can we start to hold people accountable in a way that really starts to engage them in the work?
A couple things I've found. Praise in public, reprimand or correct in private. That's a good technique. Is if Brother Jones hasn't done his assignment, you don't want to have that be known out in the quorum meeting. Another thing I think is interesting about the church is unlike all the other organizations in the world where they're actually trying to produce a product, the church is trying to improve their, quote, employees, unquote.
Yeah.
You know, we're not worried about the bottom line. We're an organization where we're trying to improve all the people in that organization and not have some kind of output.
Yeah.
So that really changes our focus. I like, I've always loved Stephen R. Covey's emotional or relationship bank account idea.
Yeah.
That is just one of those basic principles that keeps coming up over and over in all my classes, that you have to put some deposits in your followers' bank accounts or their emotional bank accounts before you can ask them to do and make these big leaps of faith and commitment and sacrifice. They have to know you care. You have to put all these deposits in there. So when you need somebody to help move Sister Jones and no one else is around, people will step to the plate and will want to support you.
Yeah.
Because they know you have supported them in the past. If they know you have their back, they will have your back when you need their help.
Yeah. And maybe from in your leadership context or in your teaching context, how do you go about doing that? You mentioned, you know, getting to know the students, being aware of obviously this interview you do at the beginning. Anything else you do to really make emotional deposits in there, you know, their account, so that when you, and then what does a withdrawal look like in that setting?
You have to be concerned with them as the whole person. You have to call out to them when you see them walking by. I remember I had a bishop once who, when you're walking down the hallway at church, he was like a zombie. You didn't feel like he even knew you were there. So you have to develop some congeniality skills and go out of your way to make sure people know, to have eye contact with them, to feel like you know what their plans are, you know something about their family. I like to show up at their games, to go see their athletic events, ask them about their dating a little bit, if they want to talk about that, or just, it's sort of an all-encompassing focus that you just can't be talking only about church things with them. You have to show that you care about them as a whole person and not just whether they showed up for the nursery lesson that day. Mm-hmm. And that way they'll feel like, oh, he loves me, not I'm just one of his cogs in his organization.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. Anything else as far as the emotional bank account or as it relates to accountability and holding people accountable? Obviously, you have to have that relationship with them so that you can hold them accountable so they don't think you're just a mean person that's coming down on them.
You have to, a good phrase we use in our leadership class is, a good leader takes more than their share of the blame and less of their share of the credit. So when something good happens, I like how the bishop gets up and praises, you know, all the ward people that helped on the party last night at the church and really lavishes the praise. But then the buck stops with them. When something goes wrong, they're willing to be the point of, you know, the throat to choke, as they say. And so you have to not have you be the center of attention. It reminded me, I was thinking about, what would it be like if the museum only had the works of the museum director on display? That would be a very poor museum. So it can't all be about the leader, can't be all about the bishop. So we should, as a leader, I think we should be more of a traffic cop, directing and getting things moving in the ward versus being a bottleneck. You know, I'm part of an organization where everything has to go through the president. No one is willing to take any initiative and be very creative because everything ends up going through the president and you don't know whether they're going to shoot it down or not. And so it sort of stifles the creativity in that organization that I belong to. I like the idea of a leader being like a vacuum where they are walking around, like we've talked about, managed by walking around, sucking up all the good ideas they can in the ward. I mean, wouldn't it be great if we had maybe a council meeting sometime where we said, all right, think back. What are some of the best things that's ever happened to you in the church? You know, everyone just puts on our thinking caps and we brainstorm about, oh, when we did this, this was a great activity. Or when I was in this ward, we did it this way. And oh, that was so wonderful. Why don't we do that again? We would just have an outpouring of creativity. And I just think that would be so exciting. I mean, we are the Church of Jesus Christ. We have access to unlimited eternal resources. We should be knocking the socks off in religion. We should be putting out fantastic music, fantastic ideas, fantastic fellowship. We should have no other organization even come close to us if we really got our act together and got everyone involved.
Yeah.
I'm just sort of excited just thinking about it. What could we do if we just, you know, put that Doctrine and Covenants section 58 into action about, you know, be anxiously engaged and not be waiting around for the bishop or the Relief Society president to tell you everything to do.
Yeah.
If we had initiative and enthusiasm, it would, I would love to see it.
And I think back that the really first step of doing that is for the leader to give permission to those other people, whether it's the members of the ward council or others, give them permission to be creative and then not just shut it down or swoop in and change things up when they have an idea and they're running with it. Right. And that, cause if they know, well, yeah, we get it, Bishop. We know you want more ideas, but last time I had an idea, nobody took me seriously. Right. Or nobody gave me a chance. Give them a chance and see how it goes.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't leave them out hanging out to dry.
Yeah. We support,
they,
right.
They have the idea and then we all try to tweak it and make it even better.
Yeah.
And we try it the first time. It doesn't work out so well. We get together and have a debriefing and say, all right, this was a pretty good idea. How can we make it better the next time? And document that and pass it on to the next leader. I mean, how many times have you had all these good ideas and then you're released from your calling and those ideas evaporate?
Yeah.
Instead of passing them on to the next leader and seeing if you can keep running with it.
Right. Yeah. And I think there's sort of the stigma cliche in our culture that we see that the perfect, you know, ward council is suddenly there's a hush and then the spirit descends and the bishop opens his mouth and states this beautiful revelation. But in reality, creativity, in my experience, creativity has been the fuel to revelation because we've gone out and tried different things. And then we come back and say, well, that did not work. But I think if we did this and that, I think it would work. So let's try that. And then it worked, right? And that was revelation. It's not this perfect, like, you know, the heavens open and a scroll, you know, lowers down from the ceiling with our plan on it. It's the creativity and trying and moving forward.
I think that's what probably excites Heavenly Father the most, is he sees his children using their own brains combined with the Spirit in this unusual synergy of spirit and intellect and experience. And I bet he's just up there smiling at some of the things we come up with sometimes. And I think he'd be more excited if we were using those skills a little more instead of just doing it the same old way it's been done, tradition in the church. Like the idea I mentioned to you before we started recording was, you know, I often look at the stake president sitting on the stand in sacrament meeting, and my creative brain is thinking, what purpose is that stake president really doing for our ward that day? How about he goes out and talks in the foyer with the other ward that's, you know, milling around, and he meets 30 new people during that sacrament meeting hour, and they know him as their stake president for the first time, and they shake his hand, and he finds out about some people in his flock, rather than just sitting stoically on the stand for three different sacrament meeting services in his stake that day. I just think we get locked into some traditions that the stake president goes around and sits on the stand in sacrament meetings. I'm thinking, why do we do that? Why aren't we more willing in the church to say, could we do it a different way?
Yeah.
Is there a better way? Could we make it better?
Yeah.
Not doctrinally at all. We're not talking about that. We're talking about procedurally.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think you share one example, but it's really a bishopric or a stake presidency or Relief Society presidency stepping back and saying, now, why is it we do this thing? Is it in the handbook? No, not really. Is it doctrinally there? Not really. So why do we do that? And could we do it a different way? That's better and more creative. That's actually accomplishing, moving us towards that vision that we've set.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think this just came to me. If I were a bishop today, I think instead of calling my best people in the ward to maybe be counselors or auxiliary leaders, I'd maybe call them to be the greeters. Mm-hmm. Think of how you could change the atmosphere of your Sunday block by having great outgoing people welcoming people to the best darn ward in the church.
Right.
And, you know, we tend to use like greeters. We tend to put our less active. Those are just coming out. we give them a low stress job to hand out the programs at the door, but we don't train them to tell them what we want them to say to people. We don't give them any advice, any feedback, and we tend to put our, you know, our less capable people in that, where you think you're saying, wow, what if I put my best people on that? You know, that's an interesting dilemma I see a lot in the leadership field. Do you put your best people where you have your problems or where you have your biggest opportunities?
Yeah.
There's some really interesting back and forth in the literature on that. And I think that's where a bishop can really have some impact. If they pray about that and say, all right, do I put Sister so-and-so, who is a fireball, on our problem or on our opportunity where we can have the biggest impact? I'm not going to answer that question because I think it's beyond our
scope.
That's
one of those that there's not like one answer, but it's worth a group of leaders stepping back and asking that question as it applies to their ward or quorum, right? What should we do? Or what's the perfect balance of people and where they're serving? So, well, Mark, this has been fantastic. Have we missed anything? Any point that would be worth discussing? We've bounced around a little bit, but nonetheless kept a core theme throughout the interview.
I just am excited to see the saints use their God-given brains and creativity and combine that with the sacrifice tradition we have in the church to really do some unusual things and not just same old, same old. If we're going to appeal to millennials and the sophisticated people of the world to try and get them to flock to our church one day, we got to do it better. We just can't be doing the way our grandparents did it.
Yeah.
We have to adapt all the best skills we find on the internet and in our business organizations, everything, and bring it to bear in the church.
Yeah. Well, and as I do, the last question I want to ask you is, as you have had opportunities to lead and obviously be a student of leadership, a teacher of leadership, how has being a leader in the church made you a better follower of Jesus Christ?
I'd like to remind my students, you know, 22-year-old in my class, I say, we're talking about leadership principles, but most of you are probably going to be followers for a good 5 to 10 years after you get out of school, before you get into any leadership role. So I tell them, take everything we learned and all the skills we have about leadership in your leadership toolbox, and for the next few years, call it your followership toolbox. So I like to look at that, like the idea of caring. I want Jesus Christ to know how much I care about him. I want to show by my actions how much I love him, and so he knows that he can count on me. I want to put lots of deposits in my relationship bank account with Jesus, to not just be calling on him when I'm in a crisis and I haven't talked to him in a long time. I want to be filling up my bank account with him as much as I can, so when I do need his desperate help one day, I don't feel like I'm bankrupting the account, that I have tried to put my side into that relationship to show him that I love him. And then when I'm in a crisis, I can call on him. And, you know, you can never get to the positive side of the ledger with the Lord. He pays and repays us so quickly for every little effort we make that we never can build up the bank account on our side. He pays us so many dividends and interest, you know, in our life spiritually and emotionally so quickly.
Concludes my interview with Mark Matheson. What a fantastic individual. I'm so grateful that we were able to connect when he was in town and record this interview. I hope you all are walking away from this interview feeling like, you know what? I'm going to go make the best darn elders quorum that this planet's ever seen, or we're going to put together the best darn ward ever. And again, it's not about puffing ourselves up or being prideful. It's about seeking and aiming for excellence. That is what we need to do, because obviously, our Savior hit excellence every day, and we should have the same intention and drive. If you know of anybody else that I should reach out to, a college professor, I love these college professors that actually are in the thick of it day in and day out and teaching these principles, because they have a lot to bring to the conversation and to our audience. And so if you know of a fantastic leadership principal or leadership professor, and they don't necessarily have to be, you know, a Latter-day Saint. Obviously, it helps to bring that context to the conversation. But if you do, I know there's a lot out there, a lot of Latter-day Saints who are teaching this stuff. You know, they've turned into some of our best episodes. So please reach out to me. Go to leadinglds.org/contact. Put the information in there. Give us a little background on who this person is, why we should reach out to him. And it's also a good idea to maybe reach out to the person as well and give them a heads up that we're connecting. And we'd love to get him on the podcast. And don't forget to visit leadinglds.org/ministering book to get your free copy of A Culture of Ministering. It's free and will change the way you lead. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.